welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode 322. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here in the sultry hot Louisville, Kentucky. And this is a Monday episode, and we have a guest, and we have some co-captains. Not the usual lineup of co-captains, because Mr. Andre Dominguez was having his little migraine issue that he deals with every once in a while, so hopefully he'll recover from that very quickly, because I know that can be. He gets them pretty tough. So, get to feeling better, Andre. But we could
do this. We could hold this up. But hey, why not though? You know, continue the tradition.
Just continue the tradition of having a cocoa captain and someone very chocolatey, which we always usually seem to get the best chocolatey cocoa captains out there. And so we ended up with just 25 minutes notice landed Mr. Pete Donovan out in Nashua, New Hampshire. How you doing, Pete?
Good. Hot. And if I was chocolate right now, I'd be melted to the floor.
So. A cocoa shake then, I guess.
Yeah. Smoothie, more like it right now. So.
All right. And then, of course, everyone's favorite co-captain that is here is Mrs. Roxana Angles, all the way out in Fort Worth, California. How you doing tonight, Roxana?
I'm doing most excellent in Palm Desert, California, in the hot heat of things. I can't even step outside, but,
I took a shower before this podcast. I like to smell nice on these shows. I don't know if you guys can smell it, but I usually the podcast stinks enough without me bringing my own scent to it. So I don't know why I took a shower, because I'm already sweating profusely even with this fan blowing on me, because this garage is hot. It's very hot out here. But speaking of hot, we got a hot show, right? And especially because our guest is from Gainesville, Florida, and I'm sure it's hot there. And that is none other than Mr. Anthony Rue. How are you doing tonight, Anthony?
I'm doing well. It was only a heat index of 109 today in Gainesville. So,
and the bad thing about Gainesville, you're not like on a beach, so you don't even have.
No, there's no sea breeze. There's right. No, it's just stifling, blisteringly, stupidly hot.
Nice. Well, Anthony, this is your first time on the show. So I think, just from the little discussion we had and the pre-recording and the message thread that we had on Facebook Messenger, you got a lot of stories. So how about we get into a little bit about you?
Well, I'm just an old guy with a lot of cameras. I was just one of these kids that, in the 60s, my dad was a complete photography fanatic and was just a gearhead. And whenever he'd buy a new camera, he'd pass it down to his old one down to me. I've been shooting since I was 7 or 8. And, by the time I was going away to college, I was convinced that I was going to make my living through photography or something to do with film. And ended up going a slightly different tact, went to Indiana University and focused on video and filmmaking at a time when we still did like 16 millimeter flatbed editing and old, like, 3/4 inch videotape.
I worked at a TV station where we used.
Oh yeah.
Which are massive.
I was, I was convinced I was going to be like,
they weren't cheap either. I remember that.
No,
yeah, they weren't. No. They were the best.
I was convinced I was going to do like electronic news gathering with those massive old Ikigami cameras ended up actually drifting more into film, and I ended up doing a lot of like 16 millimeter second unit film work on a bunch of documentary shoots and doing a bunch of like Nagra audio recording and boom operating and production management on independent films, which was a lot of fun. And one of the more interesting jobs I had during the 80s, I was living in Atlanta, and I ended up with a job with the Atlanta Film Commission as a location scout. And what that meant was I'd get a list of locations from filmmakers that were thinking about shooting in Georgia. And they'd say, okay, the film set in 1933, and I need an alley, and I need a gas station, and I need a factory, and I need a bungalow. And my job was just to drive around the state of Florida and take photos of like abandoned spaces so that we could send them to filmmakers so that they could, figure out where they wanted to shoot.
That sounds like the coolest job ever.
That's a life right there.
Right. And so I did that for like 3 years. I would just literally just, you know, I'd get my shot list and I'd get in my car and just drive into these little, you know, up in the mountains and down to the coast and, you know, into the center of the state and just look for scenes. And it really, I think that probably more than anything informed my sense of photography.
Mm. Did you get paid by the mile?
I just got paid by the job on that one. But, you know, after that, I ended up going back to get my master's degree at Indiana University, and I got it in comparative literature, but I was actually, this was like in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was right at the dawn of the digital era, and I was writing about documentary photography and documentary filmmaking and looking at the way that digital formats sort of challenged our sense of what you know, the what the veracity of a photograph was, you know, because at the time there were like, you know, there were like controversies, like National Geographic got into trouble because on a cover they moved one of the great pyramids. Yes,
I remember that. Yep. Mm-hmm.
and so I was like really interested in this notion of like what happens when things go digital and we lose that sense of the image of a photograph actually representing reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably about 5 years ahead of the curve on that one.
I always wondered like police forces, because, you know, like, you know, the police, you know, back in the day, I'm sure still today, they take, you know, photos of crime scenes or whatever.
Sure.
And when it was on film, you had a hard evidence that, you know, couldn't be altered. It was the, you know, shot straight out of the camera. But now I'm sure they all use digital cameras, but I mean, technically someone could, I mean, I'm sure they have fail safes against this, but they could be doctored.
Oh, absolutely. You know, so like, yeah. Absolutely. And you know, and the irony is this is like one of the things I wrote about was that, back at the turn of the century in the 1900s, you know, photography didn't have that same sense of what you see is real. And it was more like they had like spirit photographers, yeah, and photographers, mm, that were doing like fantasies and staging things. And it took a while before a court first accepted a photograph as being evidence. Oh, wow. They actually fought because, in court, they believed that a drawing from like a police sketch artist, mm-hmm, was a better representation of reality than a photograph, or was more trustworthy.
Right. Wow. That's very analog there. That's about as analog and, as you get.
and so there had to be that moment when suddenly people trusted photographs to be reality. And now we're in an area of, you know, in a time of deep fakes where I don't think we have that anymore. But
did they ever, I guess, didn't they use Polaroids for a while too, and like crime scene evidence?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah.
But from there I kind of drifted around and ended up at the University of Florida writing again about the history of photography and writing about visuality and vision and image making, and then got kind of burned out on academia and started cave diving as a way to blow off steam.
Mm.
And through that,
it's a strange choice, but
it was. But you know, I mean, here I am in North Florida, and we've got these beautiful springs, mm-hmm, and everybody here, I think that there's a basic understanding that they're not going to be here forever. You know, that there's a lot of environmental pressure that is, you know, the springs are degrading at a pretty rapid pace. And I thought, if I want to see these things, I should get in the water and check them out. And I ended up sort of helping to found a company that manufactured dive gear for cave exploration projects and did underwater lighting, and ended up spending 10 years doing underwater photography and underwater videography. Worked on a lot of exploration projects up in the North Florida caves, traveled around the world doing underwater photography.
And good Lord, you've done everything. Why don't you have a podcast? I'm just
like, right. I loved it. But after 10 years of diving, it was like I'd really kind of pressed my luck with the kind of diving we were doing, because we were doing like deep cave exploration. So these are dives that are like 300, 350 feet deep. You know, with decompression, we'd be in the water for, you know, from 9 to 12 hours. And I came out of it very healthy and very, you know, never having had a decompression hit. And I kind of just, I wanted to stop while I was safe. And so somehow I ended up opening up a coffee shop, and and trying to create a cultural space. It's part gallery, part coffee shop, part, you know, social space in Gainesville. And I work with an amazing staff who are, you know, most of them are creatives themselves. And we put on monthly art shows and try to make the best coffee we can and make people happy. And it gives me a lot of time to go out and shoot photos. So that's what I do now.
Man, living the dream, man. I got to say, like, you know, it's really going to make me hate going to the factory tomorrow. I'll be like, what have you done with your life, Mike? But I got to get back because I've got this image, man. Like, okay, this diving underwater in caves, right?
Yes, yes.
I can't think of anything maybe more terrifying, honestly.
Oh, it's so cool. It's so cool. It's so fun.
Yeah, but don't you feel like not only like kind of claustrophobic from being in a cave, but also in a cave submerged in water where, I don't know, man. You know, I don't know if that's for me.
I don't know. I mean, each cave is different, but a lot of the caves that we were in, I mean, these are massive. These are like mammoth cave-sized caves. I mean, outside of Tallahassee, there's Wakulla Springs, and the cave like that where it goes underneath – you know, it kind of goes underneath where the lodge is. There's an old lodge from the DuPont family at Wakulla Springs. And it's big enough that you could put a 747 in there. You know, there's another cave that was my absolute favorite. It's called Sally Ward Spring. It's also in the Tallahassee area. And you're swimming along and you're going through a cave system that it's about 10, 15 feet wide and 15 feet tall. And you're swimming along and then all of a sudden you come off of a balcony and you're in a room that is 300 feet wide, 300 feet deep, 300 feet long. It's called the cube room.
Wow.
And it's like flying off the end of a stadium.
Wow.
Into the abyss. And you're about 70 feet deep right there, but the cave continues at about 300 feet deep at the bottom.
Yikes. What kind of lights do you use?
Well, this is what we did is we made underwater lighting systems. So we made underwater HID and HMI lighting systems. Mm-hmm. That was our primary product line that we produced. And so we had like a range of lights. Like if I'm shooting video, I would have 250 watt HMI lights. And they're actually motion picture production lights. We developed them for shooting a series of IMAX films in the Bahamas. And then we used them on a bunch of TV shows. We used them on Alias and we used them for the filming of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was like big commercial HMI lighting for underwater use.
So when you went in these caves, was the purpose to like document them for like, documentaries or just for just, what was the actual,
it was a little bit of both of everything. Part of it was that we were working with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, because like I said, these caves, you know, the water quality degrades every year, you know, caves that 10 years ago, there'd be 100 foot of visibility now might average about 40 foot of visibility. And so a lot of it was working with the state to try to figure out where was the pollution coming from.
Right.
And
okay.
So we were doing like dye trace studies where we'd have somebody up on the surface releasing fluorine dye into the cave system. And then we'd set up scientific sampling stations in the cave that would like pull samples every few minutes. And they would be looking for how long it would take for the dye to travel from point A to point B or to even just to prove that it was going from point A to point B. So like, We made ourselves very, let's just say, not well liked in the city of Tallahassee when we discovered that their wastewater spray field, where they were spraying lightly treated wastewater, directly connected to the cave system in the state park. They thought that it didn't connect, but we were proving that the city was the primary input of nitrates into this cave system. And they had to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to create their wastewater disposal system because of our work. We got dirty looks when we'd walk through the halls of the state house in Tallahassee.
Kind of like you get dirty looks wearing a mask in Florida these days.
Exactly. Same people, actually. It was the same people. But then also we were just, you know, a lot of it was like going down to Mexico, down to the cenotes and the areas around Tulum and doing exploration projects there. And then also did a lot of like ocean diving as well. So, I mean, we were all over the world. I got to go to Greece and help document the dive of the wreck of the Britannic, which was the sister ship to the Titanic that sank during World War One.
Wow.
And that was actually a project for the History Channel.
Very cool. Wow. Did it get put out where it could be seen?
Yeah. It ran on the History Channel. I think bits of it are floating around on YouTube.
Oh, very cool. Oh,
you know what? I'm willing to bet that my son has probably watched whatever is on YouTube because he's obsessed with the Titanic, the Britannic, and all of the other things right now. So I'm hearing all the fun facts about it.
Well, is this the same son that was showing you the photos of the spider with the babies?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a giant cardboardia in my living room right now because he's built a Titanic Britannic replica that he can get into. So, yeah.
nice. Well, Anthony, have you ever Kentucky kind of known for caves. We got some big ones.
I know. Dry. They're all dry or muddy, you know? Right. You know, so. it's funny because if I can swim through a cave, if I can put a line down and the water is clear, I mean, I'll go pretty much anywhere, but the crazy people are the people that like haul gear into dry caves and then just go through these like muddy little traverses to get to the next part of dry caving. God, I would never do that. That's crazy.
I don't know, man. I think we're talking different. I think we're talking about two different types of crazy, but still crazy either way, I think, in my opinion. But
but I will say one thing about the diving is it really forced me into digital. Because I had been I was a filmmaker, you know, I was a film editor, a filmmaker, and when you go to do one of these dive projects, you know, you could take your Nikonos down and get 36 shots, or you could, at the time, like when we first started going, we had custom deep housings for a Nikon D100, and you could put a compact flash card in there and get 400 photos.
Right.
And, you know, it was the difference between making a successful project and not, as far as document goes. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just like, you know, for a while, I stopped shooting film just because of the logistics of diving.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, and it just, it made so much more sense to shoot digital. It took about 3 years after I got out of the dive industry before I started shooting film again and realized how much I missed it.
I was going to ask, so what was the impetus that got you back into film? Just missed it or what was it?
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of a difficult thing in that I had a really horrible home invasion robbery at one point about 10 years ago. And you know, Roxana had mentioned before the show that she had a hard drive crash, and I lost about 12 years worth of all my digital work. Cause these guys, they took five laptops. They took probably 15 hard drives. They took my backups of backups of backups.
Good Lord.
And the only thing that was left behind were my negatives and a Nikon cool scan. You know, so I started rescanning my film that I'd been shooting my entire life. And it was like, oh, you know, I really miss film. I bought a Pentax K1 because I needed a digital camera just for work.
I always wanted that camera, but
it's a fantastic camera. Yeah. And one of the reasons I switched from Nikon to Pentax is because the idea that I could shoot all the legacy K mount lenses, you know, it was just like, that was a no brainer.
Right.
And of course, like, you know, 10 years ago, you could pick up all those K lenses for so cheap.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like so easy to like just, because people were just dumping them.
Yeah.
And then it was this, there was a point where I was in Berlin at the International Cacao Conference, and walked past this old camera shop called Klick & Zur in what had been East Berlin. And my wife was like, we should go in there. And I'm looking around, and they had all these old Voigtlanders and these Olympus cameras and these retinas that they had restored. It's a really cool little shop. I mean, I highly recommend them. And my wife just kind of gets a grin on her face. She says, you should get a camera. And so
you married the right one, it sounds like.
I had recently broken, I had a Minox 35 that I had shot since I was, you know, I bought it new in 1989. And I'd broken it on a trip to Iceland where it was so cold out, I didn't realize it. The camera had frozen and I kind of sheared it right in half with, I was like shooting. I was trying to rewind. I was trying to advance the film and the whole wind mechanism just like sheared off in the cold. And they had a Voigtlander C, which was like a Balda. It looks like a Minox 35, but it was made by Voigtlander. And she's like, you should get that one. She's like, oh, but you've always wanted one of these spy cameras. So you should get a Minox too.
Nice.
And the guy behind the counter was like, your wife wants you to buy a camera? She wants you to buy two cameras? Where did you meet this woman?
Sounds like she came from the same water that Roxanne Angles comes from.
Right. But that was like an explosion in my mind. It was like, because that was like when I realized that, hey, you could find these old cameras. And, you know, I was at a point where, you know, I kind of sat down and did the math and I thought, well, you know, a lot of my friends are talking about these Sony Alphas. And I looked at what they cost and what, you know, lenses cost for it. And I realized that for the cost of a Sony Alpha, I could buy every camera I ever wanted to shoot in my life.
There you go. Right. I'm guessing this is the glory days when the cameras were really cheap because, man, there was a span of a couple of years where it was a gold mine in film cameras. Yeah.
So that's basically what I started doing is my God, I've always wanted to shoot a Kodak Metalist. Oh my God, it's so beautiful.
It is beautiful. Man, I love that camera.
I do too. I do too. And then I started like meeting people in the camera community. I'd egged on and people would tell me about like, oh, the other thing about Florida is like, you know, Florida is where, you know, people come to retire.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that you think about now, you know, they're in their 80s and 90s, but in the 1950s, these people were gearheads, and they had cameras and they had nice cameras and they've come down here to Florida.
Think about that. Yeah. But the thrift shops down there were probably
it was insane,
scenes, right? Yeah,
it was insane. I mean, like my last great find is I went down to this town that's like known as a biker bar town outside of Daytona, and I went into this really dusty, it was like an old gas station that had been converted into a thrift shop, and they had an Exacta 2 with a Biotar lens, and they're like, oh, that dirty thing, $15.
Wow.
And I'm looking at my. I don't know. It's kind of dusty.
So you're still trying to work a deal with them, right?
So I think I paid $12 for it.
Oh, there you go.
And it works. It's perfect. It's in perfect condition.
That's awesome.
So, but yeah, so like things like Pentax MEs, I was finding them for like $12, $15.
Right.
And so, yeah, I just started. And then, you know, early in my life, back when I was at Indiana University, I actually did a lot of darkroom work and had done a lot of alternative process where I was doing like large scale Van Dyke printing and I was doing platinum printing and doing a lot of pinhole work. And I was like making my own paper, then making my own emulsions to coat the paper to use in the pinhole to make contact negatives with that would dissolve when you make one print.
Is anybody else feeling like a real slacker listening to Anthony here? Like, I'm feeling like a huge slacker.
And I was doing like photolithography and photo engraver with like copper plate printing. And then also doing this stuff where we were working with like sheets of Kodalith where they had a large format darkroom at IU, and I could like make internegatives that were like 3 feet by 5 feet and then make like a cyanotype print that was that big.
Wow.
So
again, you don't have your own podcast. Why? What's going on here?
but all of that led me to like getting back into like old emulsions and developing at home. And then like listening to people like Eric over at the, All Through a Lens podcast. And, you know, I got the ECN chemicals from him for doing my Vision 3, and then finding like some guy that was one of my film contacts that I still had that was like, hey, I got a snip test from a roll of a Vision 3 500T. It's about 150 feet in here. Do you want this?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I can use that.
I got to ask, this is kind of, I'm still in my mind. I've still got this whole diving thing in my head, but wasn't, because I'm guessing like there was a time, probably late mid-90s to maybe early, mid-2000s or whatever, where like Kodak had so many different emulsions, and like especially in Ektachrome, they had so many different emotions, like for particular, for very particular things. They had one for like underwater, didn't they?
Like they had specific emulsions for underwater use.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah,
but I haven't used any of them. Because, you know, in all honesty, I had some friends that like loaned me a Nikon Os 5, and but I was mostly shooting like 3200. You know, like the Ilford 3200 underwater. Just shooting strobes. I've never liked shooting strobes. I don't like flashes. I'm an available light kind of a person.
So
I mostly shot like high speed black and white when I had to shoot film underwater.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. Well, I think we got a lot about Anthony there. Like, good Lord. Like, if we really want to dive in to it, did you see where I went there? Yeah.
Yep.
to Anthony's life, this could be a 4-hour podcast, it looks like. But let's go ahead and talk about our what we've been up to lately, and we'll save some more discussion with Anthony with the Facebook questions in the second segment. Sure. So, wow, this is going to be very interesting, man. Like, again, is everybody any? I'm sure, I don't know if the listeners do, but the other host here, are you guys feeling like you're slacking a little bit? Like, you feel a little inadequate? I certainly am, but.
I'm just like listening. It's just like story time over here. It's amazing.
Wow. Okay. So, let's go ahead and start with Pete, because Pete is taking the place of Mr. Andre Dominguez tonight. So we usually start with Andre. So Pete, that puts you up first, man. What have you been up to lately? It's been a while since we had you on the show. I think we determined it was about a year since you were on Negative Positives on an episode. So yeah, it's been a long time, but you know, we've chatted a little bit through this. It's not like this is the first time we've chatted in a while, but what have you been up to, man? What have you been doing recently?
All right. Well, I don't know how I can take place of what Anthony said, because I was just
I definitely wasn't going first on this one.
I get nothing. no, I like everybody else, you know, fell victim to the you know, the whole COVID stuff. So was out of work for a little while, working from home and stuff. I work for a high school, so I'm finally back at work, trying to get stuff ready for the fall. As far as, any photography stuff, haven't really been going out too much. I think when I was on the episode, on your podcast before, I was, right in the middle of, being a wedding DJ, and
I remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I gave it up, and I'm actually glad I did give it up, at that time, because I would have been, probably bankrupt right about now. So
that's a good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I turned to mainly concentrating on photography, booked a few weddings, had about 10, and I lost, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 to, due to the virus, by like postponing for next year, which is fine. But, I still have a few happening in the fall, busy month next month, but they've like scaled down a lot. New Hampshire has actually kind of like opened up their like to have weddings and small gatherings and stuff so you know, it was a rough for a little while, but as far as any film stuff, I haven't really done much. I got trying to get my darkroom down and built in my basement, and I've just been concentrating on that. I have a few projects in mind that I'm trying to get motivated for. I haven't really felt too much motivation there to
I feel like a lot of people are going through that right now, yours truly as well. So
I actually got motivated the other night to try to try to shoot the comet that's visible.
Yeah. I keep looking for that thing, and I've still not yet to see it. I just don't
did
know.
Did you have any luck? Yeah.
I've not had any luck.
Yeah, yeah. I almost did, because I went to the same exact spot that a friend of mine did. He caught it. I live in a city, so I mean, not like Boston City, but you know, it's pretty well congested. And the clouds were kind of popping in, and then I ended up moving to a pond area where it had like a clear view, and then just the clouds weren't really on my where my friends that night. So which sucked, because you could see the Big Dipper perfectly, and the comet just wasn't
right making a cloud.
It's the same down here in Florida. It's so hot and sort of just hazy and dense.
Yeah.
That once you go below the Big Dipper, it just hazed out and you couldn't see anything.
That's where I'm at. I think that's my problem. Yeah. I've been going out there. And plus I'm like, you know, I'm on the south end of Louisville, like, but the city is, I mean, it's a 15 minute drive to be downtown. So there's still a lot of light pollution. I'm not having any luck seeing it. So I've tried, but
I'm going to make one more. Tonight's actually pretty clear. So I'm going to probably make one more attempt tomorrow night. And then if not, I'm just going to give up on it. But other than that, nothing. Nothing really new. I do. I think I posted on the page that I've been. You guys were talking about print exchanges and stuff. Mm-hmm. Been doing a pandemic pen pal stuff that we started like back in March.
And, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we've been sending prints out, sending like either handwritten or typewritten letters to random people. Obviously, well, not random, but. You know, anyone that wants to get involved in stuff. So, that keeps the juices going.
And, oh, very cool. And where can people look, get into something like that with you?
I'll post it again on the Facebook page. It's actually, it's called the Film and Letter Pen Pal Exchange Group. I may change the name because it's just way too long.
So, okay. Is this like a Facebook group?
Yes.
I haven't seen this. How did I miss this, Pete?
Either. Yeah. I'd love that.
Yeah, I'll repost it, or I'll just send you guys the link in the group chat or something.
So. Okay, perfect.
Yep. But other than that, no, I'm just getting busy back with work again. I work in the technology department at my high school, so I'm getting ready for hybrid learning. So building video conferencing equipment for all the classrooms, getting that stuff ready, and just it's insane. But
weird times, man, for sure.
Yeah, very, very weird. Right. I am now a pro at like building mounting TVs to a card and huge like webcams that we're using. It's insane, but I'll be happy when it's over, and just it's still a mystery of like what's going to happen, which is just really, really sucky right now. But
yeah for sure. All right. Well, Roxanna, what have you been up to?
Oh, well, you know, we got to escape the heat because, as you know, I live in Palm Desert and it's like a million degrees out here. Seriously, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So we got a chance to go down to San Diego and, you know, we did it all safe. We rented a little beach house and disinfected it and wore our little masks if we did go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Shot some film down there, so that was a lot of fun. I love the beach. It's like, get out of here. We all needed it. We've been
cooped in this house,
and it's just like, oh my gosh, it's time to get out.
I agree with you, man. We're supposed to go to Florida, and this is the worst place in the world. Our governor came out today and it's like, hey guys, don't go to Florida, and if you do, when you come back, 14 days of quarantine is what we're asking. And I'm like, when I come back, I'm supposed to be at work 2 days later, like I know it's not the smartest decision because, like, I don't know, but we got to get away, man. I got to see the ocean. I have to see the ocean once a year. If I don't, I just go insane. So like, I don't know. That's sometimes you got to live life, right?
I'm down here in Florida and I can go to Georgia or I can go to like Macedonia and that's it. Otherwise it's a 14 day quarantine.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh. Well, San Diego at least is better than us in Riverside County. Our county's completely shut down all over again. My poor friend who's a hairdresser opened up, did everything. She shut back down.
Oh, no.
Terrible.
Yeah. Well, on a brighter side, and also.
But I did shoot film. I went through like Lomachrome and you know, you guys were all talking about that Vision 3. I shot some of that. And so, you know, I'm actually developed today. It's drying right now. And I actually scanned it. And guess what? That's when my hard drive crashed.
Right. And no report from Brian yet if he's got your hard drive.
But I'm going to check in on the break.
Okay. Roxana has went through a huge scanning project and re-scanning a lot of her old film negatives. And it was just about done, right? And
I was done. And I have a new drive coming tomorrow via Amazon. And guess what? It crashed today.
But the lesson is, you still have the negatives, right? So film forever, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Film forever.
It kills me when I read where people talk about like throwing away their negatives. I'm like, no!
Right.
You never know.
Yes. Backup. Do not throw your negatives away.
We got a virus on a computer once. It was the worst virus ever, and I don't know how we got it, but like all this virus did was go into your hard drive and destroy all your MP3 music files and destroy all your, like, we lost. I think I lost about 8 months of our lives of photography, because at that time I was only shooting digital. And that's one of the reasons I went back to film, but because that wasn't fun.
Yep, I was cursing to Brian. I was like, this is why I shoot film.
Right.
God. Yeah. All right, Roxanne, anything else?
No, I think that sums it up for right now.
Perfect. Well, Anthony, I almost hate to ask what you've been up to. I'm guessing you probably, custom crafted a brand new 35mm SLR. You started a film production factory somewhere in Florida. Like,
I wish. I had a horrible, terrible week. My older brother went into the hospital 2 weeks ago with complications from chemotherapy. And while he was at the ICU, he contracted COVID-19 and passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I was at the hospital with him before they had diagnosed him, but while he was crashing. And when I got home, I'd driven to Tallahassee. And when I got back to Gainesville, as I was arriving home, I get the text that they had just identified the fact he was crashing because it was COVID. And so I had to go into immediate isolation. And so today was my 14th day. So I also got my 14 days, I got my test back and it was negative. So it's been a lot of alone time in the back of the house, but the only way that I could keep sane was by grabbing cameras and just walking out in the woods behind my house and taking photos. And so I grabbed an old Russian seagull half frame and a little wind up Ansco Memo 2 half frame. And just went out and shot just in the swamp behind my house and in the area within a mile of the house. And that kept me sane, you know. It's like,
yeah, isn't that crazy? We hear that a lot, that there's the therapeutic sort of thing about just going out and shooting by yourself. It's just, there is something to it, right?
There really is. And I love developing as much as shooting.
I do too. I like it.
Same. You know? And I also I miss the dark room, but I don't miss the dark room because I used to do a lot of things like selenium toning and a lot of work with like heavy metals, and you know, my fingernails would turn blue and crack, and I don't miss. I can even remember the taste of Fix, you know. Yep. And I don't miss that at all.
You're not supposed to drink that stuff, Anthony. I don't know if you know.
I mean, but if you're around it enough, you're just breathing it all the time. Right, you know, right. It's just like, you know, I don't miss that. So I actually enjoy scanning, you know, and I know most people hate scanning, but I love Photoshop and I love scanning. And I think that you need to take scanning and as seriously as you used to take darkroom, you know. Like, there's no problem with like working your negatives in Photoshop, because we used to work our negatives way to heck, you know, back and forth in the darkroom. And it's no different in Photoshop.
What kind of scanner you use, Anthony?
I have a Primefilm XA.
Okay. Yeah.
And I've got a Nikon CoolScan.
Wow.
And then I've got an Epson V500, and I really need to upgrade that. But yeah. I use that for my 120.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. All right, anything else?
Well, like, kind of went on a eBay bender because I was, like, in isolation.
Right.
And I came across this really cool Burke and James press 4x5 for, like, $75. But of course, I didn't realize that 4x5 is this whole other black hole of
sure.
of money sucking energy, and I didn't realize how much I'd be spending on film and film holders and like, what am I going to do about developing? And oh my god, I need to buy one of those new adapters. And oh wait, I've only got two tank Patterson tanks, so I need a three tank. And there's a massive shortage of those right now in the U.S. Right. You can't buy one anywhere. So I've been like scrambling so I can take the first 4x5, and I'm really excited about it. This camera is really freaking cool. I'm really looking forward, because I've never shot, I used to do like large scale photography, but it was always with inter negatives. I've never like shot 4x5. I'm like, it's like a new challenge, and I'm really afraid about how I'm going to get sucked into it.
Yeah, I feel like large format is almost like another, it's almost like a completely different hobby than photography. Mm-hmm. It's like even more involved hobby of photography. Like it is something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, all right. Well, Anthony, very sorry to hear about your brother, man.
People got to take this thing seriously, and you got to mask up, and you've got to be kind and compassionate and think about, a small gesture that you can make that's going to save somebody else's life. I mean, he went to that hospital without the virus, and it was passed to him by somebody working at the hospital who obviously got it from somebody who was an unknown spreader. And, it's like, if a kind gesture means, being mildly inconvenienced by wearing a mask, it really will save somebody's life.
Well, the way I see it, folks, is I have to wear a mask for 10 hours in a hot factory every single night. If I can do that, you can wear one to the damn grocery store.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Right. Totally. Okay. Well, as far as my week, I will say this, normally everyone's expecting me to say, I didn't do anything, because that's what I've been doing for the last couple of months. But today I finished a roll of film. Oh, I did. And I got out I had a half roll of film left over from the last time I went and shot. Who knows when that was? Several months ago, in the Leica and the R7 this time. And it had some Kodak E100 in there that I'd half shot. And I realized, like, I was thinking about we just bought, a new vehicle. So I was like, I don't have any, we've taken some phone shots of the new car, cause this has been 20 years since the government's bought a new car. So it's a pretty exciting moment in family history when you buy a brand new vehicle. Right. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to take some film shots of the new Ford Escape. And, so I finished a roll of film, shooting nothing but, shots of our brand new, Ford Escape. So, but hey, it was nice to hit the shutter button again. And then I tried to take some pictures of our outside cat, and she was not. I realized that trying to do cat photos on a manual focus camera, she's not down with that. I need like autofocus for her, because she doesn't want to pose for some reason. Cats don't really like to pose for pictures, apparently. So but yeah, anyway, I finished a roll of film, so I'm happy about that. But I am preparing for starting to think about what film and cameras I'm going to take down to Florida this year. So that's already starting to stress me out. But will it be 10? Will it be 8? Will it be 12 cameras? I don't know, but we'll figure it out. And then I got to figure out all the film to match with those cameras. So that's kind of where I'm at there. But I did get kind of some interesting news. Mr. Mike Rosso from the FPP, he hit me up. Oh gosh, I'd ordered some double eight, no, not double eight, some super eight cartridges, two films for movie camera stuff down in Florida when we go. And he's like, Mike, I noticed you ordered some Super 8 from me. Thanks, man. Blah, blah, blah. And I think I read the email on the last solo show. Well, he hit me up this week, and he was like, hey, Mike, don't you have a double 8 camera, like a regular 8? And I was like, yeah, I got this old Kodak Brownie, one of those wind up cameras, double eight cameras or whatever, regular eight, I guess they call it. And, but I'm not going to take it to Florida because I haven't tested it. And I don't want to like, you know, shoot down there and find out it doesn't work or something. He's like, well, how about I've got some, we're coming out with our new line of regular eight film. How about I send you a roll and, we'll develop and scan it for you and everything. Just, you can be one of our testers. And I'm like, oh, hell yeah. So now I'm going to be bringing two movie cameras down to Florida, apparently, because he's going to send me a roll of his new double eight that the FPP store is going to be putting out. So I get to try that old Kodak Brownie wind up 8mm camera. And it sounds so cool. You wind it up and you hit the shutter and it has that classic cinema sound, camera sound, you know. And big, huge thanks to Mike Rosso for extending that offer to me. And it gives me a chance to shoot this camera to test it without it, you know, spending the money to see if it works. So huge thanks to Mike Rosso. That was a very kind of him, and very, very proud to be getting, I had the honor of being one of his testers for his new release of Double Eight film. So that was pretty cool. But
that's really cool. A family member just gave me a pistol grip wind up Bolex. That's a Double Eight.
Oh, and wow.
I really need to get some of that film and put it through this camera, because the camera is just stunning. I
mean, it's like
the classic 1960s Bolex.
Is it wind up like my Brownie is?
Yes, it's got a big key on the side. And,
It's so cool because they're completely mechanical. There's like no batteries. Really, really cool. And Mike's done a real push on this because, I mean, his thought is, movie film is too expensive, you know, especially like Super 8. But he's doing this so he can get the price lower so more people will get into it. And I think he's doing a fine job because this is in the end going to be cheaper to shoot than like Super 8. So I think it's going to be a way for people to get into it. And plus these mechanical cameras, they all seem to just work. You know, you don't have to worry about spending all that money and find out the camera doesn't work. They tend to just work, it seems. So
I mean, surprisingly, since they're like a wind-up camera, they're like an old clock.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It still works.
I know. It's crazy. It just shows you, man, they made things to last back then, didn't they?
They did. I mean, I learned 16mm film on cast-off World War II Bell and Howell cameras.
Oh, wow,
Like, it's like the stuff that they used when they would, like, storm the beach at Normandy. Oh, and they have these, like, wind-up Bell and Howells. And somehow Indiana University's telecom department ended up with, like, 30 of these cameras, and they were still using them in the 80s, like 40 years after they were used as like military surplus.
That's crazy.
Those things were absolutely indestructible.
Right, right. Very cool. Did you lift one from them?
I didn't. They all had like really great woolen sack lenses.
Oh, wow.
You know, like the old Cine lenses, and I still have the films I shot on those, but I should have liberated one of the cameras because I'm sure they just like, you know, surplus them.
Oh, sure.
Soon thereafter.
Right, right. Did you ever get them scanned, like digitally scanned, where you can watch them on like a computer or TV or screen or anything?
I did, but they all went under 3/4 inch.
Oh, there you go.
I like missed my window to dupe it down to VHS and then digitize it. So
Right.
Orphaned.
All right, well, that's pretty much our weeks, I guess. So let's go ahead and take us a break here, and we're going to get back in the second segment with some Facebook questions, Mr. Anthony Rue, and I'm sure that's going to bring out I don't know, we're going to find out how all the other crazy things he's done so far. It will take us a break, and we'll be right back, folks. Folks, we're back from the break, and of course we have some awesome questions from the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group directed to Mr. Anthony Rue. And so let's go ahead and dive in here and see what the community wants to know. So what's our first question to Mr. Anthony Rue?
All right, Anthony, this one's from Jack Allen. The first, it's kind of a two-parter. So it says, what is your go-to coffee order? And on a side note, how much do you love the, I'm going to totally fuck up this pronunciation, but
Lamrazoco
PB machine.
Okay, is that a coffee? Is that a coffee making machine?
It's an espresso machine.
I was going to say, sure, shit, not a camera. So.
Well, you know, my go-to coffee drink is a cappuccino. And it's personally because I spent about 8 years traveling around the world as a judge at the World Barista Competitions. And so I would,
of course you did.
So I'd go to places like, you know, I'd go to like Bogota or go to Rimini, Italy, or to Dublin, and have to like sit up on stage in front of all these people. And the best baristas in the world would come and they would have to serve you. And I was a sensory judge. So I had to drink all these drinks. They would serve you four espressos, four cappuccinos, and then four what they would call signature drinks. And
quarter pot, like right behind your
it got really hard. After
they give you a bed after right behind you too.
After about, well, it got worse because eventually I ended up as a head judge, which meant I had to drink every drink on stage. And so for every competitor, I would have to drink like significant sips of four espressos, four cappuccinos, and four drinks. So, you know, 12 espresso drinks for every competitor, and I do about 25 competitors in a day.
Oh my God.
But in judging, I learned that the cappuccino is like they've got to like pull the perfect shot of espresso, and they've got to know how to steam milk properly, and they've got to have great technique. It was like the best way to get like a snapshot of a barista's skill is with the cappuccino. I mean, you know, straight espresso, you got to be good to do it, but you know, you get the full picture of the skill of the shop with a cappuccino. So it's not that I'm like judging everybody when I go into a shop and order a cappuccino, but I'm judging them when I go into a shop and order a cappuccino.
Totally.
So that's my go-to drink. And the Lamrazoco, you know, there are a number of like high-end professional espresso machines, and the Lamrazoco PB is kind of like, it's kind of like the Leica.
It really
is. It's like the supercar, especially the PB is like the supercar. And we had a Lamrazoco GB3 for 13 years. And then it finally, after 13 years, give up the ghost. We upgraded to this new version, and it's like driving a Ferrari, or like getting your hands on, you know, like your first time you've shot a Leica. It's just like, oh my God, now I understand why people spend the money on this. So yeah, I'm all in on that one.
And here I thought like bun coffee makers were the cream of the crop, but
right. Puts my fucking, I'm throwing my Keurig away tomorrow.
my mom insists on bun coffee makers. She thinks that that's the best coffee. So there you go. So I gotta say this. Like, if I was to come to your shop, Anthony, I'm a huge coffee drinker because yep. I don't have the, let's say, the intestinal fortitude at my age to handle coffee anymore. So do you serve a mean sweet tea? Because
yes,
that's
we do.
Okay, good. There you go. Yep. I'm a big fan of sweet tea. So
yep, we got you covered.
That's the Southern in me, I guess. But
how's your cold brew?
You know, we worked with a company out of Chicago when we first opened 13 years ago called Intelligentsia. And we were working with them to help them develop their cold brew recipe. And we've done nothing but cold brew. We don't do espresso on ice. We've just done cold brew since the day we opened in 2008. And we sell a crap ton of cold brew. And I think we do a really good job.
Yeah, I'm a huge cold.
I
just switched to like black coffee in general. So
yeah,
all my cold brew, my espressos and everything is just all black.
It'll jack you up though, because cold brew's got the most caffeine of any brewing method. It really does.
Yeah, huh. There's a cafe in my area that serves like I call crack because it.
Oh, I know. Our cold brew, I can't drink a whole one because I'll get the jitters. I can drink like, you know, the better part of six or seven espresso drinks and not have any problem at all. But yeah, one of those cold brews, they mess me up.
So yeah. It's like Jolt Cola. You remember Jolt Cola?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to high school one day. It was when I first started driving. I was like, I'm driving to school one of my first times. And I was like, you know what? I can stop by the gas station and get like get something, some caffeine or whatever before I go into the school. Because I got this freedom and this independence. And I bought one of these Jolt Colas. And man, the first two periods, I was shaking like a...
I was excited because I just found out that I can get Ale 8 in Florida.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's a good.
Which is like a cross between Mountain Dew and ginger ale.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Very cool. Like all the caffeine of Mountain Dew and all the flavor of ginger ale.
Yeah, it's a Kentucky kind of famous drink. That's there you go. I like that. Yeah.
A late one.
Yeah, there it is. That is. Yeah, I think that's actually how they want you to pronounce it, right? But there's a big I think it might be the second favorite drink after bourbon in Kentucky for some strange reason. But, all right, so what we got up next for Anthony?
All right, well, up next we have Sherry Christensen from Embrace the Grain, and she asks, do you use caffeinol?
Absolutely. One of the first things when I got back into photography, when I came back from Berlin, is I found out about caffeinol and really began exploring it. And, you know, I still use it for a lot, mostly for my lower speed films, and some of my older films, but I also, I found it was a way to sort of connect with the local artistic community. I started teaching a caffeinol class. And so back before COVID, when we were like, actually, you know, let people in the cafe, I would do a monthly class on, right, I'd like loan people cameras and they'd shoot up a bunch of Cosmo photo film, because luckily we're a Cosmo photo film dealer, and I'd loan them cameras, they'd shoot, then we'd get together and mix caffeinol and actually work through the developing process at the shop. And then publish the photos for all the people taking the class, and it has gotten so many people into photography. It's been like a real entryway for people to like reconnect with black and white photography.
Oh, that's cool. And the smell of caffeinol didn't turn them off from buying a cup of coffee from you afterwards.
No. I mean, it's bad, but it's not terrible.
Right.
I smelled worse photochemicals.
I have the washing soda. I have the vitamin C and the instant coffee. I know that some caffeinol, there's a fourth ingredient on some of the formulas.
The bromide salt for the anti-drag.
So I need to find the one that just uses the three, because I'm.
Well, you can just use you can use iodized table salt instead of the bromide, and it'll work just as well.
Okay. So if I find a formula that calls for four ingredients, I can just use.
Yeah, because it really uses just like an eighth of a teaspoon. It's really just a very small amount for the drag reduction.
Is that more for like stand developing, or is that for?
Yeah.
If you're doing regular developing, you don't need that, right?
Really, it's not that much of an issue.
Okay.
I mean, I've done it both ways a whole bunch, and you know, because sometimes it's like, oh, I forgot to bring it along today, so I just would just not use it, and I'd never really noticed the difference.
Okay, perfect. Because I have some. I think I want to try. I've had all this stuff to do caffeinol for a while, but I haven't done it because I'm like, there's some stuff I really like on this roll. I don't want to try a new process yet. But I do have some rolls now that I've shot that are just like pinhole shots that I don't really care whether if I screw up, it's not gonna be anything. Like I'm not gonna lose like family shots or whatever. And I think that's where I want to try caffeinol. I'm just try it on some stuff that I don't really care. I know it's probably gonna be fine. It's gonna come out okay. But it's my first time doing it, so I want to do something a little less important with it. So
it also works really good for things like X-ray film and the duplicating films that people shoot at like ISO 6. Mm-hmm. It actually does a really good job with those, because it also does a little bit of staining.
I've heard like the 2238, that low speed, the 2238 project that Bartosik started and all that. I heard a lot of people got good results out of that with caffeinol. So
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pete, Roxanne, you guys ever done caffeinol?
I haven't. I'd love to, but I haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm. No, it's on my list of
the big to do list.
Yeah. Never ending list. So
I mean, there really is like a holy crap, it actually worked moment when you crack open the canister and you see it and you think this couldn't possibly work.
Right.
Yeah.
But it does.
Very cool. And honestly, it's, I mean, it's pretty cheap too, really. I mean, so can't beat the budget of it. So,
I mean, it's true because it's the caffeic acid is the activating reagent in the instant coffee. Mm-hmm. And the cheaper coffee has more of it. And so you don't want to spend a lot of money on the fancy stuff. You just want to get the cheapest. Like I literally use, there's like this Cuban coffee from Miami called Cafe Bustelo. Mm-hmm. And so I actually call it Bustinol when I make it, because it's like $2.50 for a big jar of
nice
Cafe Bustelo instant coffee.
Yeah, I just bought the grocery store brand of it. So
absolutely don't splash out on good coffee for this. And it's kind of funny because I'm friends with this guy named James Hoffman, who's a very famous like coffee blogger. But he was a world barista champion, and he was the guy that kind of inspired me to open my cafe. I met him back in 2008, and he just did a YouTube video where they used espresso instead of instant coffee.
Oh, wow.
And then he calculated like exactly how much espresso you'd have to pull to get the equivalent amount of the proper acids to be able to do the development. And then he did like the cost analysis of it. And it was so much more expensive than actually developing it with proper chemicals.
Okay.
Right. And he's like, yes, it works, but
not doing it again. It's funny. The next solo show that will come out next week, I have Matt Jones joins me, and he came on to talk about how he's been developing with tea. So he's using tea same way you would use caffeinol, and he's got results out of it. So when that comes out, you'll get to hear his process of doing it with tea as well. So
I'd like to try that.
Yeah, and so that'll be coming out next week with Mr. Matt Jones. So it's always fun to talk to him anyway. So all right, Anthony, we've talked about this quite a bit, and you've not even said the name of your cafe. So
it's Volta Coffee, Tea, and Chocolate in Gainesville, Florida.
There you go. I know we'll mention it again at the end, but just want to, people are probably like, what is this coffee shop? What is this place? What is this magical oasis in Florida? All right. So what do we got next?
All right. Our next question is from Greg Obst. I suck at last names. So, all right.
I think it's Obst. Maybe it's Obst. I think he corrected me on it one time, and now I can't remember what the correction was. But yeah.
Well, I apologize, Greg. So, all right. So, Anthony, which came first for you, the love of coffee or the love of photography?
It was definitely photography. Definitely photography.
Okay.
But coffee was very close behind. But it was it was definitely photography.
And is it possible for you to keep them separate in your mind now, or are they forever intertwined for you?
You know, that's actually a tougher question to answer because, you know, part of getting back into photography was that I was doing a lot of traveling. I also do, you know, I was judging competitions, and I'm also what they call a Q grader. So I work with farmers evaluating the quality of their crops. So I was traveling down to Colombia and Guatemala and Honduras several times a year. And it was like, if I'm going to go to these places, I got to be good.
What have you not done, man? Like, I mean, seriously, like, are you like 117 years old? Like,
right.
Like, do you ever
secret vampire? Like
3 hours a night? Like,
sell that espresso. He doesn't stop.
That's right. He doesn't sleep, I guess.
So you got to make things happen, you know? It's like you got to put yourself in a position where you make things happen. But yeah, but so a lot of like, you know, like why I got the Pentax K1 and why I started like really like focusing back on photography was because I was going to these places that were just like it was like a once in a lifetime opportunity. Well, maybe two or three times in a lifetime, but
for you, maybe not. But go ahead.
But yeah, so it's like really deeply ingrained. And plus cafe culture. I mean, cafe culture is just such, it's such an artistic thing to like hang out in a cafe and drink coffee and talk about art.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I'm really enjoying this. But like, man, like I had a hard time getting motivated just to like cut my grass yesterday. But I don't know. All right. What do we got next?
All right. Next we have from Karsten Deutschman. And He asked, and I think you already covered this a little bit, but I'm asking it anyway. Have you ever developed film in coffee from the shop?
Oh. You know, I haven't. Like I said, James had done it with espresso, and I want to figure out how to do it with just like regular strong brewed coffee, but I just haven't taken the time to sit down and figure out the chemistry behind it yet. And so I'm having to say, surprisingly, no.
So you're saying you don't have an instant coffee thing on your menu?
No. I mean, it's always around the shop because we're always making, like, I'm always like teaching staff how to make it, or, you know, so it's around the shop, but no, it's not on the menu.
These things where you had people kind of learn how to develop with caffeinol. How many people were you getting?
I was doing 8 people a shot.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And we did it monthly.
Oh, wow.
And then that all stopped in March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything. Right. All right. So what we got next?
All right. Next question is from Mike Novak. And it's, how do you keep the gators from coming in through your doggy door?
Surprisingly, this is a real concern.
Really?
I couldn't imagine.
I live on the edge of a place called Paynes Prairie State Preserve Park, and it's a 24,000 acre wildlife preserve that has like one of the largest concentrations of American alligators. And I can walk out, there's a trail that's about a mile from my house, and I can walk out on there at any given time and see any number of like 14, 15 foot long alligators.
Oh my God.
Wow. Actually, I sent one to you guys on the chat so that you can see one of my neighbors. And they've come into the yard, but luckily the state of Florida has a nuisance alligator hotline, which is like one of the few things about the state of Florida that is just like kind of cool, is that they actually have a toll free number that you can call and say, come get this gator out of my front yard.
They shoot it like a tranquilizer dart, because that would be kind of a fun job. I don't know, but.
As long as they get out there in a decent amount of time, they'll actually remove the gator. Like, we had one that was across our driveway with its nose through the fence looking at our cows.
Oh, no.
And it wasn't like a benevolent look across the fence. It was like lunch. And and they actually they had to send a crew of 3 out to get it. It was so big, it took 3 people to snare it. And I think it ended up on the menu of a restaurant just down the road that does gator chili.
Wow. And I'm guessing they're not even in the least part. Like, isn't there like an overpopulation time where like at times they have people actually like open like a hunting season for them because it gets out of control?
Or
they're not dangerous in any sort of way, right?
No, they're no.
Yeah. It's funny. During the break, I went outside to water the thorny bush outside my garage, and we were at the time of year where like all the frogs are like doing their mating calls, and it sounds like it was appropriate to have Anthony on that because I felt like I was in a swamp because like I'm in the suburbs, man, and like it sounds like a frog chorus out there right now. Like I don't know, thankfully no gators are coming around here, but so.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of wild living on the edge of a park. Like, we've had wild bison end up in the front yard, and you know, we had fox in the backyard just like yesterday. So literally all the critters that are on the prairie end up in our yard at some point, including the gators, unfortunately.
I'm glad I'm going to the panhandle in a couple weeks with the redneck Riviera, man. Keep me away from them. Keep me away from the gators, man.
Oh my God. I thought cockroaches were bad.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, we got those too, though.
Oh yeah. I always love getting into these conversations, especially I'm usually talking to somebody from Australia when I get into this, but like it sounds like Florida might be just as dangerous. I don't know, but like now palmetto bugs. Uh-huh. It's just a big cockroach, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they, but
like a not quite as evolved from the dinosaur cockroach as a cockroach.
But they do hang around palm trees, right? That's how they get.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they're called palmetto bugs because they like live in the litter underneath a palmetto scrub.
Okay, I was wondering because like I'll sit out at the deck at night in Florida and drink bourbon and look at the ocean. And
they're big.
and they run across the deck right by my feet, and it scares the holy hell out of me. It's like, that's the biggest damn cockroach I've ever seen. And like, we went in college. We went one time. Me and all my college buddies, we went down to good old Panama City Beach. Boys. And there was this hotel there called the Palmetto. I was like, isn't that a roach? Like, is that a roach
hotel? Like, the Roach Hotel.
It's really not a good name. Not a good name. But all right. So what we got next?
All right. Next we have from Stefan Merrimoff. Sorry. I usually get last names. And he says, how strong is the film community in Florida and where do you see it in the next 5 years? His Instagram is @developing_monochrome.
Nice. You know, it's actually pretty strong in Florida. Another one of the big sort of driving forces in the last 3 years for me is, I had no idea that Carl Havens from the Classic Lens podcast lived in Gainesville and was one of my customers.
Really?
And it was kind of funny because, you know, I manage our Instagram account and I was like looking at places that had tagged themselves, you know, at Volta. And I'm seeing all these photos and I'm like, who is this guy, Carl, who's taking all these pictures at my cafe? And finally one day I just introduced myself and we became super tight friends.
Oh, wow.
And like we would shoot on a weekly basis and I'd loan him cameras and I'd develop film for him and he'd loan me lenses and he had me on the podcast and, you know, we had become just as tight a friend as you could have. And he introduced me to all these people that I didn't know in Gainesville that were doing photography, both digital and film. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that I needed to step outside of just like the circle of fine art photographers that I kind of hung around and see how many other people were out there doing this. And it's actually kind of amazing. And since then, through that, I've also met people in Tampa and in Orlando. There's a repair shop in Orlando that has like every 4 months they have a swap meet and they get a couple hundred people out.
Oh, wow.
And they're all doing like film photography. And it's actually kind of amazing that there's as much going on in Florida that is like, you just have to like get outside your comfort zone and start seeing people that you might otherwise not have noticed to realize that there's a lot happening, which is kind of a shame because at the same time, like Volta ended up starting to carry film because like the last store in Gainesville that carried, that catered to the film crowd went out of business.
Mm.
And, you know, I realized that as I was like buying these cameras that, you know, I was going broke through, you know, FPP and through Freestyle. And I realized that if I ran out of film, I couldn't buy it anywhere. I got in touch with Stephen Delling at Cosmo, and he's like, "Sure, I'll take a chance and open a cafe as a dealer."
Yeah.
And so I've been buying from him, and we sell 120 and 35, and we actually sell a lot of film. I mean, it's not like a primary business,
but it's enough to do it. Yeah,
it's enough to do it. And so, so I meet a lot of people that have found out that. You know, because if you don't buy film from us, it's a 2.5-hour drive to get film.
Wow.
And so that's actually been really cool. It's like it's really opened up a lot of doors of like, you know, inviting conversations with customers when you realize that, you know, they're buying 120.
Right. And, do you have it on display? Like when people come in, they see it? Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Whenever I get like a craptastic, beautiful, but dead old camera, I'll put them up on the counters just to like draw attention to the film.
Yeah. And that's a good thing about I think it's one of the good things that's happened in the last, you know, so many years is like a smaller film, like even if it's just rebranding or whatever, like just having like, you know, you would have a hell of a time getting an account with Ilford or Kodak with the amount of film.
I know.
Sell.
I know.
So,
I can't even get CineStill to open me.
Really? Oh, see, Andre, we need to have him.
Yeah, Andre's like, oh man, we can't open anybody right now.
Yeah, they're always out of stock. But I'm sure they would. Like, hopefully you can get CineStill in there. Come on, Andre.
I would hope.
right.
But after 2 years of trying, I'm giving up.
Oh, Andre's been called out. Now he's in the hot seat.
That's why he didn't show up tonight.
That's right. Yeah. It could be. I'm gonna have a talk with Mr. Dominguez this week about this. All right. Yeah, go into the next one.
All right. This next one is kind of another paragraph question for you, Anthony. It's from Matt Murray. It says, you have a ton of cameras. Great to see the Baldemade Voigtländer Vito C in there. I prefer it over my Minox. How did you find yours?
And that's Matt Murray from Matt Loves Cameras podcast.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to talk about this one in the past tense. I love that camera. And this is another, like, sometimes I have bad luck. And I had gone down to, I shot maybe 3 rolls of film through the Vito C, and I loved exactly what I got. I shot it in Berlin. I shot it in Florida and was really happy with that camera. It is in a way an improved Minox 35 with a really nice color scope bar lens. But I took it with me to Colombia. I was outside of Medellin in an area called Antioquia, traveling around with a coffee buyer. And we actually dragged a couple of baristas down with me, visiting farmers in some very, very rural areas of Colombia, visiting farmers. And I took along my Vito C and I had an MX, a Pentax MX with all of my nicest K mount lenses.
Great camera. Great camera.
And I love that camera. And I had my Minox B with me, and also had a Vito B with me. I had like 4 cameras, and shot 30 rolls of film over 2 weeks. And we were on our way in Medellin to the airport. And the only time in my life I've ever had a bump and grab robbery, the guy snatched my camera bag.
Oh,
onto the way to the airport.
Oh no.
And I lost everything. I lost all the film I'd shot. I lost all those cameras, lost all my Pentax glass.
And you've had some, well, I gotta say,
I've had some bad luck. I've had
the charmed life you've lived. You've had some bad robberies. Like,
yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. I've had some bad luck. That one really stung because I can still visualize the shots that I took that I'll never see. But yeah, so, and I've never seen another Vito C. I've like wanted to buy one to replace it, but I replaced my MX and replaced my Minox, replaced the Vito B, but the C, man, I've just, they're rare cameras. You just never see them. And, so that one's some, and you know, what really bums me out is that, you know, that in Bogota, like I know, or in Medellin, you cannot find film. You know, that somebody opened them up thinking that they were going to get like a, you know, like a new Canon or a new, you know, Alpha or something,
right?
And they're a bunch of old film cameras. You know, they ended up in the trash.
Oh, probably, yeah.
You know, they just dumped it in the trash,
right?
Yeah. You know, yeah. So that camera's gone from, you know, it's in a dump somewhere in Medellin, Colombia.
Ridiculous. So,
yeah, but it was a great camera. I loved it when I had it.
Well, thanks to Matt Murray for bringing you down on this.
Cameras come and cameras go.
We love you, Matt. You're just joking.
We can see if he can bring you down again because he has another another camera, the Pen FT.
Oh, I love the Pen FT. Yeah, that. I mean, I'm a absolute. I like quirky cameras and I like weird cameras and I love half frame cameras and I love shooting the pen. I've got an F and an FT, love them both. I'll go ahead and head out. I saw that there was another question on here about the Ansco Memo, which is this weird Ricoh made Ansco camera. That's like, literally it's smaller than the, Minox 35 folded up, or it's smaller than a Lomo LCA, but it's a wind up camera. So you wind it up and it's got a motor drive, so you can take like 10 shots in a row.
Wow.
And it's weird. Like the size of a deck of cards.
Right.
It's cool.
Is it 35 millimeter?
It's half frame 35.
Okay.
And then also I've got a Canon dial, which is that weird one where it's like, looks like a pack of cards with a lens with a bunch of circles around the lens. Those are, that's not the light meter. Those are actually, It is the light meter, but those are aperture closings that go over like a CDS light meter.
Okay.
So it's not like a it's not like a trip where it's like a selenium meter around the lens. Mm-hmm. I also I've got a burning robot too with the German camera. It's also another motor drive camera where you wind it up and it's as fast as you can press the trigger. So you can fire off if you get used to it. You can fire off like, you know, 10 shots in about 3 seconds.
How many cameras do you have?
I don't know.
I was going to see if you could break our record. I think our record was like somebody said they had 250. I think.
Yeah. Sam Warner, wasn't it?
I think it was Sam Warner. Might have been.
Yeah. You know, every camera that I have is a camera that I shoot. And, you know, I think right now I'm probably maybe 150.
Okay. Okay. You're in the Dave Mahaly range. I think that's where he was at. So, yeah. Nice. All right. So what we got next?
All right. So next we have from Sam Warner. Good friend of the podcast. And he asks, how do you like the Ansco Memo 2?
Well, that's what I was just talking about. It's a brilliant little camera.
There you go. That's the one.
I just posted a whole bunch of photos from it to my Instagram feed. So if anybody wants to check it out.
There you go.
He says, though, I have one, but he has not shot it yet.
Oh, he should.
So along with that, do you give him any special, like, tips for it?
You just have to keep it wound up so that you can keep pulling that trigger. You know, it's so fun to shoot these because they're like mechanical. So you right. Click the button and it just goes zzz, and it goes to the next frame.
Wild.
it's almost like the movie cameras that you wind.
It is.
Up. Okay.
Oh, I love that aspect of them. They're really cool and fun to play with. And wow. It looks like such a toy. It looks like a 1950s television.
Wow. Nice. So cool. I'm gonna have to look it up because I have no idea. Like what that one even looks like.
Right.
it's an odd little camera, that's for sure.
I love strange cameras. That's so cool. Yeah.
That was actually one that Mike Ekman, who has the Mike Ekman, the website.
Yeah, it's a great website. Yeah.
Mm. Actually, I'm going to be writing for Mike.
Oh, nice.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, he just asked me if I'd consider writing for him.
Very cool.
And so we swap cameras, and like I've sent him a box of cameras, and he sent me a Contarex, which is like, oh my God, I can't believe he's trusting me with a Contax Contarex. Which has just been an honor to be able to shoot. He frantically messaged me saying, hey, there's this Ansco that's on eBay and nobody's bidding on it. And it's like $6. You need to get this camera. Wow. So there's an underground of like Mike Ekman and Mike Novak and a few of us and Johnny who trade eBay auctions on like weird things that are going for unbelievable low prices.
Oh my gosh, how fun!
All right, so where are we at? Are we getting close or where are we at?
I think we're at the last one.
Oh, nice. Let's go and get to that one.
All right, this one's from Theo. I'm gonna mess this. Theo Panagopoulos, and it says, have you ever considered having, all right, have you ever considered having a Tokyo camera style type of feed of people's analog cameras coming into the coffee shop, maybe called coffee camera style?
You know, I mean, we got people bringing their cameras through, but I kind of, when people are enjoying themselves in the cafe, I kind of don't want to go put a camera in their face and take a picture. So I generally give people a lot of space unless they approach me. I tend not to I tend not to do that. But it's a cool idea because we do get a lot of cameras through the shop.
Do you sell any cameras at the shop? Have you ever thought about doing that?
You know, I'm sure that Janet, my wife, would appreciate it if I did. But I don't sell books and I don't sell cameras.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, apparently you don't want to let go of your cameras. That's
fine. No, I don't. I think I've sold like at one point I had 3 Kodak medalists. And I thought, I don't need 3.
Right.
So I sold the medalist and bought a Contax 2A. Hmm.
So you said you still have 2 medalists though?
Yeah. I've got a 1 and a 2.
Nice. Nice. I have the 2. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, those are such, I could just, those cameras mean a lot to me. They're just like perfect sculptural things.
Yeah. I feel like it might be beautiful. I mean, as some people call it, and I think it might be true, the best American made camera ever, right?
I would agree. You know, I absolutely, and the quality of the image that I get from that, it's just, it always surprises me.
The glass is crazy good on those. Yeah. That's when Kodak was like at the heyday of their camera making. Yeah. And, yep. Good stuff.
And that Ektar lens is just stunning.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. All right. Well, a huge thanks to the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group for great questions to Anthony. And you guys always come through with flying colors and really help make our job easier. So huge thanks to everybody there. And we're going to take one more little break. And I'm going to go see if the frogs are still trying to mate outside. And and we'll come back with some questions that the hosts want to ask Anthony to follow up. So we'll take a break and be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back for the final segment, and that's where we liked follow up with Anthony. Just some things we want to kind of dive into a little bit that maybe didn't get covered in the Facebook questions. And, I kind of selfishly, I've been wanting to have Anthony on for a while, but this was the perfect time for me because I'm getting ready to go back down to Florida to our favorite little beach town, Mexico Beach down there, and which obviously you've heard me talk about many times on the podcast, got destroyed by Hurricane Michael. Still hate that it was named Michael. I don't like it. And a couple years ago, and obviously, it's still in a state of rebuilding, so we're going to see because we're going to be staying in that town. So I'll see kind of where it's at. But Anthony, you live down in Florida, and like, what was your experience with it? Did you go and like shoot it? And how did you like? Just tell me a little bit about that because when we were down there last year, we were staying close to there, but we did drive through Mexico Beach, and I wanted to take some photos, but it was just kind of weird. It was just too depressing, man. I couldn't really take photos of the damage because it just was, everything was just too depressing for me because that town had meant so much to my family for so long. It just didn't feel right for some reason. Like, how did you approach it and did you shoot it? And like, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's really tough because I mean, that was a horrible year for everybody in this part of Florida with the hurricanes, mm-hmm. you know, and like we had several that like they didn't hit Gainesville directly, but we came really close my wife works with the state of Florida with Elder Affairs and she'd been a disaster coordinator. So she had been like stationed where a number of these hurricanes had come through. And, you know, I got pretty sensitive about not wanting to be a disaster porn photographer.
Right. Right.
You know, and you have to be sensitive to that because I mean, these people's lives are really
decimated.
Ruined
yeah,
when this
yeah.
happens. So, I mean, I was always curious about it because, you know, I mean, I've lived in Florida off and on since I was like 10 years old and I've lived through hurricanes and I photographed hurricanes and I've got photos of like Hurricane Irene coming through Cedar Key. I've got actually the last Super 8 film I shot was of my car almost getting swept away while I was photographing at a beach when a storm came through in 85. Mm. And so, you know, having been through it, I mean, I would be pissed if somebody came through and photographed my house if it had just had a tree fall on it.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that it makes for a dramatic photo. So I waited until like last, like November, you know, so it's like at least a year.
Uh-huh.
And, I had to go, I had some business I had to do on the, in the panhandle. And I decided to drive back on the coastal highway all the way back from the beach, Panama City, all the way back to Gainesville.
Right.
And it's a drive I've done, you know, many, many times. I love going to like little like mom and pop seafood restaurants along the way.
Yeah.
And what I really wanted is I wanted to go back to Goofy Golf in Panama City Beach, which is this 1950s miniature golf course with these like giant concrete dinosaurs.
I've been there. Yeah.
I love Goofy Golf. And I really wanted to see if Goofy Golf was okay. Mm-hmm. And so I made the trip out there, went to Goofy Golf, actually played a round of golf. And in a freakish way, the storm like hopscotched right over it. It had no damage at all. And all around it, places were still flattened.
Wow. And
then, you know, driving back on the coastal highway, you're leaving, you know, Panama City Beach and you're heading back to the east. And then all of a sudden you realize that it was like, you know, a year and a half since the hurricane.
Right.
And it looked like Syria. I mean, literally, it's like an American city where you would be like in Panama City and you'd be at a crossroads and you would know that maybe that was a McDonald's only because there was like a part of a McDonald's sign sticking out of a piece of rubble.
Right.
And that might have been a gas station across the street. And and nobody had been able to rebuild. Then as I moved closer to Mexico Beach, I just stopped taking pictures. You know, it's like by the time you got to Mexico Beach and you saw that, you know, when you'd see like four blocks where it was just scraped down to the concrete.
Oh, yeah. Nothing.
You know, right.
It looked like a bomb went off. Yeah.
Honestly, there's nothing that I could do to take a photo that added anything.
That's the way I felt last year, man. I went there and, I don't think I was prepared mentally to see how bad it was. I think I had a vision in my mind of what it would look like. And it was 100 times worse than what I thought it would be. And it just put me in a mood. Like I was just, emotionally not, I couldn't pick up a camera and do it. I just couldn't do it. Like it was just devastating to see. And I just felt like there's no way I can do this. I know things like this need to be documented, you know, but I'm not the guy to do it, you know?
There's a deeper dread that this is America. This is Florida. They shouldn't look like this after, you know, these people
that should, long after, right? Yeah,
no, people should have had a helping hand, and things should be on their way to being rebuilt.
Right.
And I mean, now if you go back, I'm sure that hopefully things are better now.
I think what I was looking for. I was looking for signs of hope. My plan was to shoot signs of hope, but there was none. And I'm hoping when we go there this year, by now there'll be some signs of hope, you know, because that's what I want to document. Mm-hmm. I don't want to document the devastation. I just don't. I don't have no desire to do that. The town means too much to my family. It's been our vacation spot for decades, you know, and I couldn't do it. And I'm hoping this year there'll be signs of hope because that's what I want to document, you know. But
I mean, I think I took a couple of pictures of like ghost piers, on the way more towards Apalachicola, where, you know, there were these like old fishing piers that had been completely like the decks completely blown out. And it was just like a series of posts disappearing into the water.
Oh yeah.
Just because I thought that was kind of evocative for what everything else was, you know, that had happened.
Yeah.
Without it being somebody's life.
Yeah. Yeah. And the strange thing was and I don't know, and I probably said it on this podcast, but like that hurricane, it could not have picked a worse town to hit. Like the eye hit Mexico Beach and that town was, all those buildings were old. They were not built to hurricane standards. Like it could have hit if it hit any other city, they probably would have withstood it a lot better. But that town was not, just from the time those buildings were built, it was old school Florida. Like they weren't built to modern hurricane standards. It was like the worst situation of a town. It's never good for a hurricane to hit any town, but that town was the least prepared to handle that kind of a storm coming in. And it was unbelievable. And I'm with you on that though. It's weird to drive through a town in America a year after something like that happened and see like still no hope. And very depressing. So,
I mean, I would say that, you know, if I were going back there and spending time, I would try because I'm not the most comfortable with like asking people to take their photos.
Yeah.
But I think that I would want to like get people to tell me their stories and then take their pictures and like do portraits
of them. Right.
Like take portraits of the people that have survived it and get them to tell you their story so that at least their stories can be heard. Because I think that like hearing how people have you know come through this is important, probably more important than oh my gosh, look how badly screwed up this town is.
Right.
Is to actually give a little hope to people getting their stories out and let people know that, you know, people, because I mean there are a lot of proud people in the panhandle, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They're hard scrabble people. They're people that, you know, they've been through hurricanes and bad things before and they build back, you know, they come back. Of course they're also, you know, stupid wealthy people who build unsustainable buildings on beaches where they shouldn't be building them on dunes and they just say, well, the insurance is going to pay for them to come back, and you know they spend, you know, 2 months out of the year there. Don't have as much sympathy for that as the people that actually live there.
There's some real resilience of like the human spirit. I think that you can kind of draw out of situations like that. That I think that's the hope, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be much more compelling to photograph than to do more ruined buildings.
Yeah, I agree. Good point. All right. Well, thank you, Anthony. That gives me a little perspective, because I wondered if I, you know, maybe should I have taken more photos last year. I just didn't have the heart to do it, man.
I'm with you. Like I said, I literally put my camera down once I got it, you know, because there's that Air Force base that you pass through.
Oh, yeah. Tyndall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we could see like the whole areas that were deforested.
Yes. It used to be nothing but huge, huge trees all along that road.
All the pine trees there. Yeah. Just like, I tried to get some pictures of like, because there's like one area where like every tree is broken off at a 45 degree angle.
Right. Right.
You know, and it looked like somebody went through with a protractor and just like broke every tree at the same exact place.
I did take one photo of that. That's about the only shot that I was able to muster. But
but other than that, I just put my camera down.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay. Well, thank you, Anthony. That helps me. Helps me wrap my head around what I was feeling last year and hopefully how I can approach it this year. Absolutely. Let's go with Roxana next. What do you got, Roxana?
All right. Well, I'm going to make things it's so hard to see those places when disaster hits. I completely agree. It's hard when you can't find the hope. So I'm going to switch things up with my.
You're going to get us out of this bummer mood that we're in.
Yes, I am. All right. So. You know, in the past episodes, sometimes we talk about how certain places have like different color schemes and like how things photograph very differently. And hearing you talk about all of your adventures and all of the things that you've done, if you could shoot in one place, either that you want to go or have been that you want to go back, it doesn't matter. And you could bring your one camera, one type of film. What would it be? So it's a three-parter. Yep. Go.
I am dying to get back to Iceland.
Oh.
I had an unintentional 2-week break in Iceland. I went there to judge a barista competition, and while I was at the airport flying out, they had to cancel the competition, and I was on the flight. And so I got there with nothing to do, and so I just rented a car and drove by myself into the countryside. That's the trip where I broke my Nox 35, which was the only film camera I brought. So I shot everything else with my K1 with a IRIX 15 millimeter lens. And I want to take every film camera that I own back there. but if I had to take one camera to go back there, you know, I learned my lesson with my Minox that it can be an unforgiving place. So I'd want a full manual camera. And so it'd be a toss up between my Pentax MX.
Nice.
And my Contax S2.
Contax. Build the Pentax. Be a working man.
I think that the Pentax makes more sense, because it's more like a Kalashnikov. It's like less a precision instrument and more like it can handle that ruggedness.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah,
and I probably would stick with the wide angle lens, because that's just like such an alien landscape, and it really worked well with like a 28 millimeter lens. And my favorite film of all time right now is this quirky thing. I found one reel of 1966 Kodak 5220XT.
Oh my God. Cool.
What the hell is this film?
What is it?
So XT was, so they had 5222, which is double X.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, 200, and it's really meant for shooting under tungsten in nighttime and in studio settings under lighting. And they came out with this film in 1966 called XT, and it was the cinema version of Panatomic X.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And it is, and it's one of these things where I was on a European auction site, and somebody had a 200-foot roll of XT and a 200-foot roll of double X, and they were like, not sure how it was stored, not sure how old it is. Well, they only made XT from 1966 to 1970. So they only made it for like 4 years. And it was so fine-grained that they would use it for rear projection. So in the old movies, like the old, like they'd be like Humphrey Bogart behind the wheel of a car, and, you know, he's just actually on a soundstage, and there's a film of him, you know, filmed out of the back of a second unit car.
So they're projecting behind them. That behind him?
Right. So XT was the film that they used to film that, so that when they re-photographed it, there'd be no grain.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. Interesting.
So it's just got this, like perfect tonality range, perfect grain. And for a film that's, like, you know, almost 50 years old, it's pristine. And I've probably got 120 feet of it left.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it's just like, I've never seen it anywhere. I've never seen it for sale anywhere. I've talked to one other person, actually. Vanya from Through the Lens podcast had shot like one roll of it.
Wow.
And I would take my MX with a 28 millimeter lens and all of my remaining XT into Iceland. And that would be like the perfect shot. Perfect vacation.
It doesn't surprise me you answer this, because I kind of thought of a question. I was like, you know, we go to Florida for vacation, but I wonder where do people in Florida go for vacation? Because so many people go down there to have vacation.
You know? I go to Montreal every winter.
There you go. You guys want to go somewhere cold, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Right. I go to Montreal. Go to New York City for Christmas. Actually, I went to New York City this year for there's a band called Yola Tango, and they have a series of Hanukkah shows.
Yep. Love that
band. And so I got tickets for three consecutive nights of Yola Tango.
Oh, nice.
So I went on my birthday, which is the day after Christmas, and it was just magical. But yeah, that's awesome. That's what I do, is get the hell out of Florida.
It's I had my aunt, and I have an aunt that moved down to Florida for, I don't know, I guess they were down there like 5-6 years or something like that. And they're back now, but they're already talking about wanting to move back down there again. But they would come home for Christmas. And there was one Christmas, it was a pretty mild Christmas here in Kentucky. It was like, I don't know, it was like 49 degrees or something like that. And they're like, their blood had gotten so thin from being down in Florida. I was like, it's so cold up here. It's 49 degrees on Christmas Day. What are you talking about? This is amazing. Like, I think it just thins your blood down there, man. Like, so when you go to a cold place, are you like, oh my God, like, and
I miss the cold.
Nope. Not with you on that one, but, all right. So Pete, what do you got for Anthony?
You just, Roxana basically took my question, but, no. All right. So you mentioned that you had your main camera that you would shoot forever, like if you go to Iceland and everything. So do you have when you shoot a certain film, do you have a your certain developers that you use,
absolutely,
Capinol and stuff like that, you know?
Absolutely. I actually on old films, I'm using a lot of like weird old expired films. I tend to use Rodinal and do a semi-stand of 1:100.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm using a more modern film, I'm probably using HC-110. Mm-hmm. Although I do keep Xtol around, it's sort of like my fallback. But I use I primarily use HC-110 and Rodinal.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so do I.
Have you used the more watery AC-110 that's come out? I've got a bottle of it. I haven't cracked it up yet because I'm still
not yet. I still have an extra bottle of the old version.
I have the old version that I haven't even cracked yet.
Yeah.
Apparently it's the same. It should actually just mix better. It should actually probably be better. But I'm still trying to get through my thick syrup at this point. But yeah.
Yep.
What about like we've talked a lot about black and white photography. You're in Florida, Anthony. Like there's a lot of color down there. And like, where are you at with color?
I do shoot. I actually shoot a fair amount of color. And I was, if I had a second half to the earlier question, if I had to shoot color, I would probably load up Ektachrome in my Medalist and go back to Colombia, which is the most photographic country I've ever been to in my life.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But no, I shoot, I've got like 200 feet of this Vision 3 500T.
Uh-huh.
And so that kind of goes into any camera that I'm testing.
Mm-hmm. What's your ramjet removal process?
I actually use the little bicarbonate of soda for 30 seconds and then rinse, pre-rinse.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people do that. And does that work really well?
Yeah, it does. It works surprisingly well. But I also shoot a lot of, I buy the Kodak Pro Image 100, which I shot
in Florida last year. Yeah.
I kind of like that film a lot.
I like the Color Plus down there because I want my photos to look a little vintage sometimes. And Mexico Beach was such an old school town back before it got destroyed that I thought it went really well with the town. But what about Ektar? Ektar seems to always be a good choice for landscapes or whatever.
I probably shot that least. Oh, the other two El Cheapo bulk films that I found in the last year is some guy just was like, I've got this old film and it's in a bulk loader and I don't use it anymore. And I don't use my bulk loaders and I just want to get rid of them. So I'll sell you both bulk loaders for $10. And I think, well, I can always use an extra bulk loader. And I get home and realize that one of them had 100 foot of Velvia 50. The other one had 100 feet of Portra 400.
Oh my God.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Wow. That's insane.
So I've been shooting a lot of that.
I imagine. Yeah. Oh, you had a bulk roll of Portra? Because I never even heard of that existing.
Yeah.
It was like from 97.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, I think we're getting to the ass end of this podcast. So I think there's something we need to talk about, right? With as far as a Kardashian sort of.
Oh.
Well, Pete, did you have anything else for Anthony before we go into that?
No, I'm good. I want to hear about the Kardashian.
Well, if anybody wants to follow me on Instagram, my username there is Kino_Pravda. But that wasn't my original Instagram handle. My original Instagram handle was True, TRUE, which is I'm True at Volta Coffee and True at every domain I've ever had. I've had True as my handle. And some East European hacker really, really, really wanted my domain and just kept on badgering me to buy it. And I refused. And one day I woke up and found out that he'd hacked my account and changed my name to a bunch of just random characters. And he sat on my name for until somebody was going to pay him. And then eventually Khloe Kardashian apparently had an offspring that she named True. And she had to have the Instagram handle. So who knows how many millions of dollars Khloe Kardashian paid for my hacked identity from Instagram. And I thought that Kino Pravda was just going to be a placeholder until I got my name back, but it's now me on Instagram. and Khloe Kardashian owes me like an endorsement. You know, I want Khloe to come back and her contrition can be, go to Volta Coffee whenever you're in Florida.
Right.
Well, I mean, I said during the break when you told us the story, I feel like you should have at least gotten a nice set of butt implants out of this deal. I mean, you know? All right. Well, this has been a real blast. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on tonight. And wow, it's been a wow. I am going to have to like motivate myself to be more productive in my life, apparently.
That's right.
And also a huge thanks to Pete Donovan for helping us out tonight with Andre getting a migraine right before we recorded. So thanks, Pete, for helping us out tonight.
Yeah, thanks. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's been a blast.
Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and kind of wrap this up, and let's get our socials out. We'll start with you, Anthony. Tell everybody where you want people to check you out and all that good stuff.
Well, like I said, on Instagram, I'm Kino_Pravda. And then Volta Coffee is on there as well. And I'm on Flickr. My old business name was Dazine Design. And so if you want to see all my crazy old camera collections, and I've got them all organized out so you can see test shots from every camera. So just search out Dazine Design, which is just a bad German pun. I think my name might actually, if you just search for Anthony Rue on Flickr, I'll probably turn up.
Right.
And so those are the best ways to see my work.
And if you're in Gainesville, what's the coffee? How's the coffee shop running?
It's Volta Coffee, Tea and Chocolate. We're doing our best to adapt to the craziness of the post Corona world. And so for now we're a takeout only shop. But we're doing okay. We've got an incredible amount of community support, and the shops made it through the worst of it, and we're just chugging along.
Oh, that's very cool. Awesome. Very cool.
Good luck.
Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Pete, where can people check you out, man?
You can find me on Instagram at Pete Donovan Photo altogether. I post every now and then when I have something interesting to post. So,
all right, and Roxana.
I am Roxanalog on Instagram mainly.
All right. You can check me out on Instagram at Gutterman Photo, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. You can join the Facebook group. It is the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. And we also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives, mostly ran by a friend of the show, Mr. Bryce Randall. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives. Maybe Bryce will see it and highlight it for us all to check out. And if you want to support this program, it is on Ko-fi. It is www.ko-fi.com/negativepositives. All right. I think that's pretty much the socials. Again, huge thanks to Anthony Rue for joining us tonight. That's been a real blast. And for Pete Donovan for helping out a not feeling well, Andre. Andre, get well soon, brother. And we'll have you on the next episode, hopefully. So, but again, everybody have a great week. Everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool film photos.
There it is. Nailed it, Anthony. Nailed it. All right, folks. We'll talk to you soon. Gutterman Cave Production!